Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Washington, D.C., it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry Online Radio. Now, here's your host, Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
Good evening, everyone. This is Michael Anthony Ingram. I'm here tonight with my very special guest, Kristen Kowalski. Very good. Are you with me, Kristen?
I am, Michael. Hi, how are you?
I'm quite well, and yourself?
I'm great, thank you.
Well, good. I'm glad you're in a good place tonight. Let's begin this journey, all right?
Excellent.
All right. What is poetry, Kristen? That's the first question tonight.
I'm glad you asked that. I have been listening to your show, and it amazed me from the first time I heard it that you lead with that question. It's such a big question, and I've heard so many interesting answers to it, and that was my first worry when you invited me, and I'm so grateful you did. How on earth did I answer that? So I wrote a poem. So hopefully this poem will answer my thoughts on that. First slows down our flight past not noticing, takes a pen light to expose the detail of small matters, builds a world of something simple as a smile or lotus petal, or holds a concave lens to reduce grand themes and times. Whatever combination of pointed and melodic, meaning travels as the crow flies over traffic. Words soar nearer the state of nature before a subscription of paragraphs and rhetoric, where meaning evolves from cadence, sound, intuition, where connection is courted, where truth aligns more closely to the heart than to facts. Thank you.
Tell me more about your poem and why that's poetry. Tell me more about it.
Okay. So oftentimes I may read a poem or have a friend read a poem and they may ask me what the poem means. You might ask me that tonight. Often my response to that is, well, what do you think it means? And there's something about So there's something about poetry that I think has to be felt and intuited. And maybe that's true with all creative writing. You know, oftentimes you'll read a great short story or a great play, and, you read something into it. Maybe you hear an interview with the author that addresses it, and that wasn't even an intended, meaning or, image that they wished to convey, but that's what the reader takes from it. And I feel like most poetry, at least I like to think most of my poetry, is somewhat like that. So I don't usually have an agenda when I sit down to write a poem. I have a sense of something I want to capture, be it a feeling, or maybe a vague message, but, not necessarily in a way that I'm trying to convince someone as expose it. So, and I think that there's a freedom in the way you can do that with poetry, where you don't have to stand on kind of so many, conventions of language. You can kind of approach it more like music, and in a way, it's simpler because it's really just down to the words and the rhythm of the words and the form on the page. So, so it's a little hard to define poetry if you're looking at it kind of, through that lens of, something that maybe doesn't have to stand on convention, and
I understand.
And that maybe is a little more, a matter of the heart or spiritual,
Oh, yes, very nice, very nice. As you think about your body of work, what are some of the predominant themes of your work?
I do write a lot about longing. I feel like that's sort of an undercurrent in it, and probably equally hope. So those sort of themes are sort of threaded throughout it all. And then I have, a good number of love poems, probably more love lost poems. Death is a pretty big theme with me. I'm I'm a bit morbid, so I have a good number of poems, you know, dealing with mortality. At the same point in time, I like to think I'm pretty funny. So in many of my poems, even the ones that are a little bit more serious, I often have, you know, a line or two that I think is funny. Now, when I'm reading it out loud and I laugh, people sometimes look at me like, what is she doing? That's really dark, you know, but sometimes a poet will get my humor. So I like to think that there is some, you know, humor kind of woven into it too.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, when you think about, again, your work, what was an early experience where you learned that poetic language had power?
Oh, my goodness. That's a good question. You know, I'm just going to have to go with music for that one.
Okay.
I don't know that I was exposed to a ton of poetry when I was very young, but I was always exposed to a lot of music. So, and I love singing. So, you know, and sometimes lyrics can stand alone as poetry. I don't know that the best lyrics do. I think that, you know, it's that relationship between, you know, the music and the instruments and the tempo and the lyrics and everything together that is so complicated. But but sometimes they certainly can. And the way you kind of hear poetry or, you know, decide lines and stanzas is very similar, I think, to sort of the cadence in music and the tempo, how you keep rhythm. So, I don't know, maybe my love of music was a natural segue into my love of poetry, but I probably didn't really investigate poetry tons until after college.
So, something was in you that needed to come out, and it came out in a poetic way.
Yes. Yeah, I did write some poems when I was young. But I've really have probably only been seriously writing poetry for the past 3 years. So I thought of myself as a writer, but I guess I thought that I would probably be writing, you know, the great American novel. So that's where my head was, but I didn't really write much, you know. I mean I wrote a ton, but I never edited and I never finished. Then I had a family. So then I was being a mom for 10 years, and which I love doing. I love being a mom, and my kids are awesome, and that was super. But now they're kind of older, and they're sort of independent, and they don't want me, you know, watching them all the time.
And
a lot of space has opened up in my life. So I don't know. And to be honest, I'm not sure that I would be writing so much poetry if it weren't for this great community in the DMV. I would definitely be writing, but
yes.
So when I started looking for, you know, community of writers, I fell in with just an amazing community of poets. And I had less luck finding groups of people that, you know, write prose and want to have workshops and want to get together and do readings. Like that's all been a little bit more difficult. And I don't know, the few people I've met over the past 3 years have been fine, but these poets around here are just amazingly wonderful, expansive, generous, open, supportive, supportive people. So I just want to spend time with them. So I want to go to their workshops, and they always make my poetry better. And I always want to impress them. So I'm always writing poetry. So it's really been, you know, really the community that has, I think, helped inspire and make me a poet, which is so cool.
Well, share one of your works, please.
Okay. All right. This one is called You Say We're Like Magnets. Let's talk about magnets and electricity, how like poles repel, how stirring is all that's needed to make energy. Let's talk about breath, blood, iron, and the fever you got in the hotel room when you allowed me to wipe your brow. Remember you so still, my orbiting around you, how you wanted to stay. Remember staying, the current versus the potential, so rare in your moving on. Let's talk about wind, water, heat, and steam, that fuel movement to change charges to make opposites attract. Let's talk about the center of the earth, the magnetic field protecting us from the sun, how you crushed the hornet's nest outside my window. Let's talk about how you laugh when I say time is relative, then note I'm right and laugh again, your eruption, my explosion. Let's talk about quantum physics and how things take up more space when still than when in motion. Let's talk about magnets not needing to touch to exert force. Let's talk about your relationship to nickel, how your silver hair shines, how I align more closely with copper, the common penny trying so hard. Thank you.
Wow, I like that, Kristen.
Yay! Thanks.
I like that.
Yeah, I like that one. It's
That's
fun.
A great form. That is a
Thank
great,
you.
Great
well,
form.
Michael, it's
Go
so
ahead,
funny, and you asked about themes, and I never think to say this, but So the title of my my book that's going to come out in 2020, one is Escape Velocity. The book is organized by the laws of motion, you know, Isaac Newton. And when I was sort of getting my head around that and brainstorming and looking, I didn't realize I have a ton of a poetry that uses science and scientific kind of themes and ideas as you know, vehicles for you know, other meaning that I'm trying to get at. So that's, it's just very interesting. This is a good example of that. But it was fun. So, and I do a lot of scientific research and get to learn a lot of stuff. So it's neat.
It sounds like a thing to me. It sounds like a thing. Sounds like a thing. That's incredible. That's very, very nice. Well, when you
awesome.
Think
Thanks.
About your work, all great writers have great writing influences. Who are some of yours, and what makes them special in your eyes?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I can answer this a couple of ways. I guess after college, you know, kind of 90s, early 90s, I went through, you know, big poetry phase, just reading a ton, wrote a little bit, but mostly reading a ton. I loved Mary Oliver, Jory Graham's Hybrid of Plants and Ghosts, one of my favorite books. There's an author, I don't know how well known she is, Alina Catalina Davis, let's say that right. Kalatiak Davis, Alina Kalatiak Davis. Anyway, she had the book End Her Soul, Out of Nothing. I just love that book so much. I carried that around with me. I actually had to rip it in half to share it with a friend because I didn't think I could live without it, but I didn't think she could either. So since I bought many copies. So there were all these just amazing poets. You know, when I was reading Lawrence Ferlinghetti, I've always liked Carl Sandburg. I still read him, and you know, I mentioned before the show that I'm a teacher, and, you know, some of his poems are very accessible to students, which is really fun. I was also reading a lot of fiction. So there are a lot of kind of authors in that time that, I don't know, I would just turn to and carry around with me, you know, kind of like, you know, friends and just give me different ways to look at the world and, you know, more of an appreciation of language. But really these days, you know, I just keep buying books, which makes it, you know, it's just a challenge to read them all. But I mean, really, like I said about the community in the DMV, so many of the books I'm buying are local writers, just people.
Yes.
We have so many good and brilliant poets so nearby. And I have to like resist buying, well, when the world was open and we had poetry readings, I'd have to, you know, resist buying books at the readings. Like sometimes I would deliberately not carry my wallet because I just, you know, have a lot of books and, you know, we're all on limited income, but then I almost always regret it. And I'm on Amazon or like, you know, a bookshop and I'm looking to get them because, it's just such great talent around here. So that inspires me too. So.
All right. Share another poem.
Okay. All right. Let's see. So I'll read Second Chances. It's one of my happier poems. I want to knit swatches of Egyptian cotton, wrap your scars in shades of sky, fill the furrow of your brow with sheer layers of gloss from kisses over years. Peace made through surrender, still loss. Holes may close as well as fill, then what space is left? Things unloosed, dulcet rifts or discordant rifts, bedrock, If salt water cured ailments of memory, I would weep over cup, offer it as though from lords with prayers for comfort. This is what they mean by second chances, to put blood back in the stone. Thank you.
Read that one again for me, please. I like that.
Again,
that
really?
Again.
Oh, gosh.
Yes.
Thank you. All right, second chances. I want to knit swatches of Egyptian cotton, wrap your scars in shades of sky, fill the furrow of your brow with sheer layers of gloss from kisses over years. Peace made through surrender, still loss. Holes may close as well as fill. Then what space is left? Things unloosed, dulcid rips or discordant drips, bedrock. If salt water cured ailments of memory, I would weep over cup, offer it as though from lords with prayers for comfort. This is what they mean by second chances, to put blood back in the stone.
Wow.
Thank you.
You know, poets hail from all over the world. Where do you hail from?
I was born in Lynn, Massachusetts. Grew up there until middle school. Yes. So, yep. And then I went to high school in Florida, and I traveled around a lot, but I've been living around here since the early 90s.
All right. All right. Thank you. Let's take a brief break, and we'll be right back.
Awesome. Be really fortunate to have a love of the process. So, so I feel like that's you know my sense of success. I mean that I have this life, you know, not right now with my teaching, but generally I have this life where I can carve chunks of time to sit outside or by a window, you know, and I write half the time and half the time I'm just, you know, staring and meditating, but that's such a gift. And then if I actually compose something that, you know, I mean, speaks to me, it uplifts me, you know, sometimes I'm working through things, you know, through writing them. I don't know. There's something that just in the process, both in doing it and then feeling like you got it right, whether or not anybody reads it, I love that. So I feel like just having that space is a success, like I win, right? So then on top of it, if I have this great community, you know, where I've made friends and colleagues and people who share work, you know, that's like icing on the cake. And then, you know, and then, gosh, having other people care to read it, like getting it published places. I mean, that's really cool. And about that, like, I don't know. Like, you know, nobody wants to be famous, and which is good because New Forward probably will. But you know, faith is another theme in my poetry, and it's probably not any traditional faith. But there's a sense that what I write, someone probably has to hear. And I'm not sure if they're going to hear it how I intended it when I wrote it, and I'm not sure, you know, who that is. So, you know, when I have friends who write prose, they have very specific questions they ask for marketing purposes, like who their audience is number one, and they've really defined that. I don't really know who my audience is, but I like to think that if I put things out there, I mean, probably someone needs to hear it. Just like I imagine all the great, you know, books I found by little known poets in youth bookstores whose poems have really spoken to me. I mean, they don't know that I needed that, but sometimes I have in my life. So just the notion that could happen, I won't know if it does or not, but I mean, that would make me feel very successful.
All right, very nice. Share another piece of your work.
Awesome. Okay, so this was, you know, a relatively early one called The Enormity of It. Look to desert, rock, Gia monster, the ease of one thin layer on a hot day. Oh, but the mirages. Maybe every beautiful boy just wants to be a beautiful girl, protected, seduced, to be swept off. Quivering words like blades of seagrass whirl. Hard to know from where sounds come underwater. Ganymede raining down, always the beautiful boys, bound to Aquarius, though gazing far off. I pass along details of another Comcast failure. Speak of missed meetups, late arrivals. Did you hear the things unsaid, the enormity of it? Things not written or spoken, only perceived in the trailing off. Gurgling, trickling, babbling flow of missing and mercy can carve stone as well, but to smash rocks, to gravel and anger is infinitely easier and better received. Rain runs off. Have you tried singing underwater? It's most fun alone, even if you dislike the company. Self-hate and hating life are two distinct states, but neither worth fretting. If hate fails to kill, it burns off. Burdens lie in the apple seed your mother warned would grow to a tree in your belly. Grief, love, grace, things that might fill a desert sky at night. Stay awake, look for Aquarius as Ganymede takes off. Thank you.
You know, you use the word, the title in your poem, The Enormity of It. So much is happening,
yes,
in our enormous world. There's protests,
yes,
there's fires, there's pandemics, you name it. What do you see,
yeah,
being the role of a poet in modern day society? What is our role?
Oh, goodness, Michael, that's such a good question. Yeah, I mean, I kind of think that the role of the poet now is the role that the poet's always had, you know, maybe a bit of a gadfly, certainly someone who speaks truth and raises issues. I've come to love, especially a lot of local poets, but in general, you know, poets that write on themes of social justice, you know, and more political poetry. I don't perceive that I do that. I have some generous poet friends that point out that in some of the themes that I address in my poems, they become political, you know, in the sense that the personal is a political, which I do believe. So I don't know. I guess I hedge on a little bit because I kind of wish that I had a flair or way to find poetic words or inspiring words to put to what's happening today to try to be a bit more of an activist in my poetry, but that doesn't come naturally to me yet. So, you know, I think my focus on poetry is a little bit small, but I mean, I like to think that I'm pointing out some truths about, you know, human dignity and value of humanity and diversity that, you know, hopefully uplift everyone.
Well, I believe that day-to-day truths are just as important as other truths. We need them all.
Thank you. That's what I tell myself.
We need them all. We need, that's exactly right. We need them all. Share another poem.
Awesome. I'd be happy to. So, I don't know. This one's, it's almost political. I'm going to read this one. I was going to save it for last. But, so this is one of my personal favorites. It's actually a happy poem. You probably won't know that if I don't tell you. So, but it was trying to be inspiring. So, I don't know that anyone will see. But anyway, so here it is. It's called Family Dinner, A Metaphysical Check-In. Angst of youth, elemental. Global warming, yes, but we shrunk the hole in the ozone. The Gulf War did not annihilate us. Malthus was proven wrong. Humans are smart despite evidence to the contrary. An obligatory dinner turned essential discussion. Bullies tend toward half-wit. You're ugly and stupid, as though creativity isn't gorgeous. So we discuss ingenuity and comebacks, places for help, space for ignoring, and expansive possibilities in the transcendental or even God. No one wants the night to end. Full of doubt, too, I check myself against pop psychology. Parents, it seems, cause all Gen Z's anxiety. Do I solve too many of your problems? Do I pressure you to be happy? No, they console, as miserable as I was in 87, fretting the end of the world. The end. That's what makes me so happy. It's kind of sad, but it's kind of true. I don't think we're going to die, but...
Does writing energize or exhaust you?
Oh, it absolutely energizes me. So,
Tell me more.
Yeah, thank you. If I don't write for chunks of time, I'm out of sorts. Like I think I need that space. And like I said before, I mean, you know, half my writing time is really just, you know, staring out a window and meditating. So maybe it's that I need. But you know, like I said, also, I definitely work through things writing. And there's something about it that, that elevates me and inspires me. I guess when I thought about how I was going to answer your question about writers that initially kind of inspired me in a poetic way, the first person I thought about was Thoreau. It's not really a poet thing, but it's that spirit of, self-reflection, connection with nature, transcendentalism, right? So... it feels a little like church to me, right? And
okay.
We all need something like that, I think. So, I never hang out and write for, 2 to 5 hours and then want to take a nap. Like that never happens. I always feel
okay.
Like, yes. And once in a while, I'm getting better at knowing when I struggle with a poem all day and it's just never going to get good and it's always going to suck. Versus, when I struggle for hours and I feel like, oh, I'm going to get it. And then you get it and you're like, oh, but regardless of how that plays out, just the process, kind of gives me a lift. So yeah, so I'm kind of addicted. I love it.
All right. Very nice. As you think about poems or poetry in general,
mm-hmm.
What are some of the most prevalent ingredients that go into the concoction we call a poem? What ingredients go into creating a poem?
Oh, that's great. I'm getting not on your list, but thank you.
It's on my list. It's not on that list.
It's on my list. Okay. It's on your list. Good. Okay, good. So I would say, the imagery that goes in, the language. I said before that I don't think that I don't know if I said this. I thought when I was talking about intuitive that you don't need to necessarily interpret or understand poems literally. some of my friends now are listening and saying, good, because we don't understand your poems. So, okay, fair enough. But I think that the way it sounds, and whether it's, you know, poems that you read aloud, and I often do think that most of my poems are better on a page, but I do know that most poems are probably better read aloud. And just the way it sounds and the meter and the rhythm with the words and the sound choices, I mean, all that sort of creates an atmosphere. So that in and of itself could, you know, imply meaning. So the way it sounds, the way it looks on a page, and then of course, whatever feeling or meaning it has. And you've had such a diverse array of guests, and it's been really interesting to me to listen to these interviews, where some of the people who speak of poetry really speak of it as, you know, I have a message, I'm getting it out. It's almost like a speech, but it's beautifully delivered, and you know, has very thoughtful lines to it, right? And some of your guests are more, you know, this captures sort of an atmosphere, and it's not as much this is a message. So, I mean, it could be a variety of things, but certainly the sound, the word choice, the images, and the rhythm. I'd say all those things are necessary for a poem.
All right. Share another piece of your work.
Okay. All right. So, hey, I want to read this one. So this, I have a couple that are really pretty new. And I was speaking of local poets. I was reading E. Ethelbert Miller this summer. I don't even know where I got this book. Like, I have all these poetry books on my shelf. And I was going camping, so I just grabbed a bunch of books that I hadn't read yet. And he had all these beautiful love poems. And it inspired me. So I've started sort of a series of love poems about men, which I don't know. I don't have as easy a time finding. So I'm going to read one of those as soon as I find it here.
Read two if you like.
Okay, I'm going to read two of those. Okay, this one's called, so this is funny. So I had the inspiration from reading Miller's work, and then my daughter, you know, loves to tell me little science facts. So this is sort of a mashup of those two incidents.
Okay.
Variation on evolution. Salt bearing value of weight like diamonds, like gold currency in 2000 BC, rain in the northern Mojave Desert. Salt and spice, tremors of the best kind, and the making of continents, merging of mountains. A little funny, gender wars and celebration of she. Much to love in women, rich with nuance and passion, moonlight and ocean, guardians of its species, but not to the exclusion of he. Voice box that undulates, teasing target for kisses above naked, flat chest, sloping to the root of countless jokes, infinite mysteries, always decisive. I honor the definitive, even when wrong, relief to my spiraling, meandering, having no idea. I hear sperm now can be made of bone marrow. I hear the Y chromosome lacks genetic diversity, hints toward extinction. I'll take the pandemic, in-my-face news, bombs, exploding need and guilt, God's game of hide-and-seek. Grateful these are my times, with bearable seasons and fruit-bearing trees, while we still have men. And then I will read a second one. When you close the door. We trade Irish step, German folk claps and stomps for sways and circles. Everything turns Latin when the moon issues dares, candles light, and you close the door. We spill upon covers agave syrup, cinnamon, salt water. Space turns outside in, air in shared breath, long refrains, shake of maracas and rain sticks beneath roof under stars. We wish uneven when blanched by midday summer sun. We follow tails of meteors, draw constellations and freckles, moles, scars. Every song that plays, the best song ever. time of lucid dreams or subconscious wakefulness in skin and emotion. We never danced the salsa or tango at the bar, but now play wandering minstrels, drum rhythms on each other's hips. The end.
Very nice. Very nice.
Thank you.
You know,
those are kind of fun.
All poets have several words that come up over and over and over again, words or sentences that they just can't help but use in their work. What are three of your absolute favorite words to use?
Okay, yeah, so just when I read that poem, I feel like I use salt water all the time. And, right, because I've read it like three times tonight. Maybe it's just I'm in a salt water mood tonight. But also hips. I feel like that's, I use that to capture almost anything of that sort of sexual nature. So hips comes up a lot. I don't know what else. I do quite a bit with shadows, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I don't know. Invisibility is a theme that comes up kind of a lot in my writing.
Tell me about invisibility. That's a great one. Tell me about invisibility.
I thank you. Okay. Then I'm going to read a poem about, where I reference it after this, but, I just think it would be great to be invisible. And I don't know who, someone came up with a study kind of recently, like in the past, I don't know, 5 or so years, about middle-aged women and how they, they go through some, depression or blues or whatever because they're invisible. I mean, that's the bomb, right? I don't know. And I can feel it a little bit. I mean, nobody, is honking their horns or screaming when I'm walking down the street. But that's awesome, right? Because that was really annoying when you're young. And I would just love to be invisible. I think it makes these days very difficult for me. I mean, I'm fine how I look is how I look. I don't care. But my eyes are in my head probably for a reason, right? It's not even natural to see yourself. I don't even particularly like mirrors. I mean, it's fine. But suddenly I'm watching myself all day on Zoom. And it's very strange. And I make very weird facial expressions. But I didn't know that because I don't usually watch myself talking, right? So, but now I know. I can't unknow that, so it's painful. But it's not just these days. I've always kind of wanted to be invisible. So, So it's just a theme, and I like it.
Okay. All right. You say you've got a poem that follows that up.
I do. That touches it. I wasn't going to read pandemic poetry, but here we are. I'm going to do it.
Yeah, please.
All right. Thank you. When screens replace touch. Invisibility, I say when my son asks what superhero power I would choose. I wasn't much older than he is when I set my goal to be a disembodied spirit. Think I'll have that one day because I'm lucky. I'd forgo touch if I could go unseen, but I'd rather have it all, the feel of wind and fingertips, skin and hair and be out of sight. Fond of woods, yurts, and tents for their simple beauty, it's true, but also their lack of mirrors. I don't perceive a movie of me when we talk, which is why it scares me when you ask, why do you look like that? Why did you make that face? How do I know? I can't see me. A man once responded only to my words. He held still to my hand through grimace, shrug, even tear, never asking. I tag him the one that got away. Can't faces be just about the rest? Breath, blinks, kisses, sustenance, and not freckles and wrinkles, pretty eyes and cute noses, crooked teeth and dark circles? Yet here we are, you watching me and me watching me, and I don't know where else to look. The end.
Wow. I really like that.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks.
Take a brief break and we'll be right back.
Awesome.
Thank you.
All right, we are back. If you have a question for Kristen, the call-in number is 646-787-1631. I'm so glad that you're with me tonight.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. This is fun.
I'm glad. I'm glad. You have a light that shines around yourself.
That's so sweet. Thank you.
We've never met.
I think it just might be the coffee this time of night, but thank you.
But I think that there's a light. How active are you on social media? How active are you on social media, and how do you think it affects the way that you write?
Oh, that's an interesting question. So that's my waste of time. There was a phase like when I was 15 where I watched General Hospital. But anyway, in all my adult life, I've never been really a TV person. So I listen to a ton of music. I'm a huge music person, and I'm trying to learn guitar, and I write a lot, or try to, and now I'm working a lot. But when I want to veg and just, look that way, I'm usually on Facebook. which I used to, I used to feel bad, like it was a waste of time. And I got mostly hooked on it to show cute pictures of my kids, because who doesn't want to see cute pictures of my kids, right? But it's like, right, thank you. It's just so much more than that now. I mean, all these just really smart people posting really great poetry. So it's almost like, the best of. I can just, go on. And, some people, like Reuben Jackson, posts like a new poem every day. And you feel like, well, hell, that's definitely not a waste of time, right?
Right.
So I do a lot of Facebook. And I don't think it probably affects my poetry much, except for in that, like whenever you read good poetry, and I do get a fair amount from Facebook, sometimes it gives you an idea, and then you write something, in that vein, or some symbolism or image they used, or you want to respond to it, something like that. So in that respect, just like reading a good book, it impacts my writing. But I don't really post any poems or anything like that myself. I do keep a blog on my website, and that
okay.
I really do that to post. I'm not really sure what my motivation is there. But I have these little rules, and then I try to follow them, and I don't even 100% know why. But I did a website because I really wanted to get accepted to a residency, and they seemed to think that
okay.
I needed one, and then they didn't accept me anyway. But that happens, and that's fine.
Okay.
Everything's a long shot,
yeah.
But then I have this website, so part of it was a blog, so I decided to do a blog. So a friend told me I had to blog every week, but I can't blog every week. So my thing is I try to blog once a month, and anyway, hopefully they're kind of interesting, but I do that for social media, but I don't think it's as rewarding as my poetry, but it's a different challenge. And then I do a little bit on Twitter, a little bit more recently. And then I have like maybe five friends that I love that are on either and don't do any Facebook. So I'm on Instagram to follow them, but I sometimes forget to check, but so I'm all over social media. I'm like,
yes, you are. Yes,
with
you
this
are.
New millennium.
What's the title of your blog?
Oh, do I need a title for a blog? Oh my God, I never thought of that. I should title it. I don't have one. I didn't even think that. I just have a website. I don't even know what to say. I don't know. I never thought of that. I mean, every blog post has a title.
Okay.
So
it's just under your name.
Yeah.
It's under your name.
Yeah.
Well,
so it's just on my website, yeah.
Okay.
And I probably need to think
right.
that through. I'm not great with titles anyway, but I never even thought of a blog title, but it's a really good idea.
Well, thank you. I'm glad I could contribute
yeah.
something. I'm glad.
I'm going
well,
to get back to you
question.
On that. I'm making a note.
Do that. We're friends now. So.
I love that.
And I
awesome.
Had a great question, too. I had a great, great question. Oh, yes. Congratulations on your upcoming book. Your will be published.
Yes, thanks. Well, did you ask when?
No. Do you know when?
Do I know when? Yeah. Yeah, so it's coming out. It should be coming out April 2021.
Okay,
so Escape
fantastic.
Velocity. Yes. Yeah,
okay,
from Kelsey Books.
All right, great. So if you had to convince a friend. Well, great. It is something. If you had to convince a friend or colleague to read your book, what might you tell them?
If I had to convince a friend or a colleague to read my book, I mean, I guess I would pick a couple of my favorite poems and read them to them. Or if I could think of some personal connection I think they might have to my poetry, I'd read them to them. Or I would tell them I'd give them a book for free with a really cool inscription. So that might make them feel obligated to read it. So those might be some strategies I use.
Okay. Share another poem.
Awesome. Okay. Let's see. All right, I'll do this one. Claiming a moment. Sweet scents swing to clapping leaves and crooning birds, breeze on which there is floating. Bees tease crepe myrtle flowers, hover shy of touch. A blue jay lands long enough for a prayer. Mindfulness calls for appreciation and also a taking for granted, to guard moments against all they're not. Enclosures, shackles, EKGs, bare feet on ice. Also present in burdens ignored is gratitude. Also there but by God's grace. Also what can be done? Of two minds cut short in study of myriad shades of green, grow back as four minds cut short in shapes of turns taken by sun and wind on limbs and grow again. A hydra unleashed, heads oriented toward all compass tick marks, question whether the prayer is of thanksgiving, intercession, or repentance. Not mutually exclusive, but even the hydra has only one heart. Thanks.
Even the hydra only has one heart. Wow.
Yeah.
That's deep.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's really deep. You know.
That's one of those that I struggled with all day, and I sat and I worked on it, and it wasn't going anywhere, Michael. So it's like I'm wasting like an entire day. I could be swimming in a lake. But then that came out. Gosh, that's a beautiful thing, right? I was like, yes, this is why I do that. That just happens. Yeah.
Yes.
It was fun.
Well, that's great. You know, they say that to see the world with complete honesty, one needs to look to comedians, artists, and poets. All right?
Yes.
What do you think emerges naturally from your work? What emerges from Kristen when we read your work or listen to you share your work?
Well, in terms of honesty, I guess there's a sense of a struggle, I think, in most of my pieces, where, you know, truth and lies, you know, itself can even be a theme in some of my poems. You know, forgiveness and anger, the faith or hope to love versus, you know, let's not. You know, all those conflicts. You know, I think that I try to treat kind of the struggle in those conflicts in a way that's hopefully not, you know, trite or cliche, but sort of, you know, an honest look at kind of the difficult times we face being, you know, individuals, you know, who are in need of some measure of isolation, you know, plus in a society, and how we balance all those things.
Share Share two of your poems.
Two more poems. Okay. That sounds good. Okay, I'm going to read one little one.
I know you're tired.
No, I'm good.
Hey, hang in there with me.
I'm with you. I'm going to read a little one. You know, I mentioned that I write some prose. I'm actually now in a really nice writing group in Gaithersburg, but that's just really recently, and they're being helpful. But this is called Plots. Plots hide behind the ears of those who stand as characters, messy between the strands of hair, untucked, tangled. They dare you to label pro or antagonist, just to flip notions on a dime, ever giving vertigo, as though there ever really were a point. Spotlight on time, like dancing drunk in the club, they're trying hard to be more like a whirling dervish. So that was Plots. And I'm going to read the County Fair. So this one is going to be in the Washington Writers Publishing House anthology, This Is What America Looks Like, which should be coming out in February. That's kind of exciting.
All right. Yes.
Thank you. It's the County Fair. Outside the tilt-a-whirl, I seek thin 1 o'clock shade left of a hat booth, all audience and smiles, waiting. If he were here, would already have kissed at least 4 times, under Genesis twice, outside alien abduction, now. I'd squint in the sun after offering him shade. I always liked the burn, never minded the sting of red, peeling, freckles deepened by sun, even when teased by the mean kids. My kid, eyes fixed on me, the compass rose, jumps off the ride, runs back in line, so fast I'm dizzy. Squeeze my fingers hard to ground myself. If he were here, we'd be holding hands, weighed down by backpack with 6 liters of water, by now smushed PB&Js, and flannels unneeded till after dark. I'd still rise on tiptoes to find his lips while my boy spun too fast to notice, and the fair would be as charming as false nostalgia for the 50s, fitting right in with our romance. We'd save voices beneath shouting carnies, gas generators, and music wailing, hold on to me. And.
So that was Plot and County Fair.
That the first little one, yeah, exactly, yes.
What role should a title play in a poem?
Michael, that's such a good question.
Well, thank you.
I think that's my next. I don't know, investigation, struggle thing. You know, we're all on this journey, right? I don't think I'm where I'm going to be with my poetry. I think I'm still evolving and growing. And I think generally my titles are not my strength, I would say. And I know that.
Why
and
do you say
that? Once in a while I remember to, I don't know. They can be really, article title or, they're not very poetic often, and they don't always enhance the poem. They just sort of say what it is. I mean, they're just not, I probably don't put enough thought into them. Once in a while I do. My best titles are when I have a line that I really love that doesn't fit in the poem and then I make it the title and then it's poetic cause it was part of the poem. But, what role should a title play? I mean, some people are masterful at that, right? It sets a stage. It sort of gives the foundation. You're already in the feeling of it, or it makes you wonder. So it could do any of those great things that my titles don't typically do. But one day, when I talk to you again in a few years,
And you will be back. I plan to invite you.
I would
back,
love that.
So once your book is published and out there. Come back, and we'll promote it. All right.
Awesome.
All right. We've got about 5 minutes left, and what I'd like you to do is to share another poem. Then I've got about 2 more questions, and then it'll be the conclusion of the evening. All right?
Awesome. So
all right. Share another poem for us.
All right, great. I didn't, I'm just pulling it up. I didn't have this on the list of things that I might read tonight, but this is a title
okay.
I like, so I think I'll read it.
Okay, all right.
So I have one good title. Here we go. Here's the title. Weaning when the
wait,
moon
wait a minute.
Is
it
waxing.
It better be good, too. It better be good, too. It better be good, too. If it's a good title,
you're gonna
it
love
better
it.
Be a good title.
You're going to be like, come back next week. You're going to love it. Okay. Here it is. Waning when the moon is waxing.
Mm.
Nice, right?
Yeah, okay. Very nice.
All right, here we go. If only we fell like snowflakes, never crashing, never boring, not loud. We're only human, whirling in our individual little confoundations. We stuff a sock in it to muffle words, think of something else, turn away. We're not all good actors. Some of us have to not care to look like we don't care. I pray to the god of apathy every day. Using our passions against each other, we try to look sane with poor aim and lack of wherewithal while we tamp down things intended for keeps. Singing, chutzpah, ardor, the want to be heard in the rare conversation that matters, just shoveled away the sooted snow. End.
That was a great poem and a fantastic
oh gosh,
title.
Thank you very much.
Hello.
I did it.
Some poets are also active in other creative areas. What are some of your favorite non-poetry or literature activities?
That's awesome. Well, I love reading, and like I said, you know, I still think that I'll write prose at some point. When I write prose, then I get a really good poetry idea, so it always leads to that, so that probably just means I'll write more poetry, which is awesome.
Yes.
I paint a lot once a year. Well, once a year before the county fair, and then I win ribbons. So, like, I've had second place, third place, fourth place, fifth place was my favorite. I really like that painting. But we didn't have a county fair, so I haven't painted this year. Yeah. Every year I'm like, oh, I'll keep at it. But I'm not going to keep at it because I want to write poetry, right? And I want to play guitar.
Right,
so,
okay.
If I could crack the songwriting code, that would be cool. But you see, most of my poems don't rhyme. And so that makes it hard for me to kind of figure out how to make lyrics.
I
would love to be.
How do you feel about rhyming poetry? How do you feel about poetry that rhymes?
I love some poetry that rhymes.
Okay.
In my list too, one of the books I have right next to me, I grabbed a bunch of my favorite books in case I wanted to talk more about influences and, you know, favorite poets. And, like, I love Robert Service. I feel like I should be writing poetry like Robert Service, but on my themes. I think that would be a hoot, right? But, anyway. And I like a lot of, modern rhyming poets, and I love a lot of lyrics. I just, I've written some, but, I mean, to be honest, I think they're my weaker poems. So, now, that's not saying that I couldn't put them to music and make them a song, but I'm not good enough of a guitar player yet to do that anyway. So that's a whole different
all
quest
right.
that I'm on.
Is there a poem that you'd like
I'll
to
live
share
really long.
That I had an opportunity to share? Is there a poem?
Let's see. Would you like to hear one more?
We've got time for one more. Yes. I'd love to hear one more.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Oh, goodness. I read the one I was going to end with. So let me just one moment. I'll get something.
All right. No problem.
Thank you so much. All right. I will read. Let me read this. It's I said I write a lot of poems about death and dark, and then I didn't read any. So let's fit that in because that's a good thing to end on, right?
Okay. All
right. This one is called Drowning, and this just came out in Beltway Poetry. Drowning. What is the cause of death? What is the difference? When life is terminal and living on so long, dirge is my dance. You think move on. I challenge you to unzip your skin and see if you make it to the West Coast. Exactly. His life was not devastating to me. Miracle of Lazarus echoed in one more song again and again until I almost took them for granted. He died of drink. Deplorable, your eyes declare, the debased death of a drunkard. That's my devotion. Dissonance in experience versus wanting to speak to whom, for what, preferring the company of his grave or memory. Quiet is not discordant, and there is no silence. Not at the stone with the breeze amidst tree frogs, so fucking loud I can barely hear his voice play back in mind. End.
When people hear your work, they usually want more. What's next for you as a poet?
Just keep writing, yeah?
To keep writing.
So hopefully, yeah, hopefully I'll get better at titles and I'll explore different themes and, yeah.
All right. Well, I'd like to thank you so much for being with me tonight. You made the hour. I mean, you're an incredible, incredible poet. You have a very bright future. I wish you nothing but the best. And I'd like you to return once your book is published.
That was very nice, and that sounds like a great idea, and I love being here, and it was a pleasure to visit with you, so thank you so much.
All right. Well, to our listening audience, thanks again for tuning in, and we'll be back next week. So good night, everybody. Good night, Kristen.
Good night. Thank you so much.
You have just listened to the Quintessential Listening Poetry Online Radio Podcast with your host, Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, and make sure to catch our next episode.